Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
You've been hearing about Airbus today, the operator of the Swords Express in Dublin, and this story in the Irish Independent, which says the company has applied to Fingal County Council to temporarily retain 19 modular units and 6 mobile home units at their bus depot in Dublin 15 for 3 years. And the modular units that it wants to keep wouldn't be lived in and would be used by drivers to take breaks between shifts, which the drivers are obviously required to take under current legislation. But whatever about the rest periods and rest areas, it raises questions about whether or not, more generally, employers should provide accommodation for their staff. Is there an onus on companies to find somewhere to live for their employees? 087 1400 106. We want to hear from you today. Pat McDonough is the owner of Supermax, businessman. Pat, you're very welcome to the programme. Your group has spent a lot of money in purchasing accommodation to house staff over the years.
Yeah, absolutely. Over the last number of years, I suppose, in both purchasing and renting property, we find it as a help to get staff because it helps reduce the difficulty and the stress of them getting accommodation themselves, especially in bigger cities, but also in larger towns across the country. And it also helps to retain staff longer because they know they have accommodation and they're safe and secure for the foreseeable future, for as long as they want to stay, if they want to use it, you know. So it is a big help.
And the accommodation that you provide, Pat, is that rental accommodation?
Some of it is rental, some of it is purchased, and some of it, there's a lot of shops around the country and a lot of areas upstairs and over retail shops and restaurants, etc., that hasn't been used, say, for some time. And if that can be converted, then that's great, so that you can have the accommodation adjacent to the shop or whatever. Mm. So it's a mixture of everything because that's just the way the situation is out there with the scarcity of accommodation. It's both rental purchase and conversion of upstairs buildings, which there's a lot of across county towns and cities across the country.
How many staff, roughly, would you reckon are you currently providing some form of accommodation to across the group?
Oh, gosh, I'd say probably in the region of 250, 300 at least.
So it's big numbers. And without that accommodation, I take it you'd struggle to retain those staff then, Pat?
Yes, certainly in some cases. You know, I mean, your summer staff are generally accommodated at home because they're living at home. But for the from the autumn onwards, when the summer staff go back to college or school, then you're very much dependent on full-time staff. So whether it's Irish staff or non-national staff, you know, the difficulty is there for everyone to try and get accommodation. And especially when the students are back in college, then there's a flurry for accommodation in every student town across and student city across the country.
Do you think this is going to become a larger component of the Irish workforce now, of demands that staff will have, that there be an expectation on employers or companies to provide some kind of housing provision?
Well, you know, this is new to hospitality, especially because I know back in the day, Hayden's Hotel in Benasol had staff accommodation 30 or 40 years ago because it's convenient. And when staff are working kind of late at night or unsociable hours, it's very convenient for them to have the accommodation relatively close to the outlet or whatever. So it is going to probably grow from here onwards because, you know, it's beneficial to both parties. And generally speaking, the accommodation is probably less costly than if you're going to have to go searching for it on the open market.
Tony is with us on the line too, Pat. Tony Walsh is a businessman based in County Kerry. Tony, you actually built accommodation for your staff.
That's correct, Andrea. We built 13 houses around 2020. We sold them at cost to our employees, roughly for around 165k each. They were ERH's houses, so the scheme worked out very well.
I remember nearly 6 years ago, Tony, talking to you about this initiative on the programme, and people had very, you know, mixed views to it at the time. But 6 years on, are those employees that got those houses, for, you know, that paid for those houses from you in 2020, are they still living in those units?
They are living there. Their mortgages are fixed, they're around 750 a month. They're A-rated houses, so, you know, they weren't affected by the energy crisis. They're only half a kilometre from the building, from work, so they can always walk to work. So they're happy out.
Just explain to listeners that maybe might not remember your situation, Tony, why you decided to do this.
Well, there was no accommodation available locally in Castle Island, so and anything that was available was very, very expensive. So we had company land, so we decided to build our own houses. Took a little bit of time to get it off the ground, but we got there eventually.
Now, you didn't build the houses as a gift to staff. I mean, they had to take out a mortgage and buy them.
Oh yeah, exactly. They paid what it cost us to build the house.
But it just meant that they got the house at, it was a cost price purchase, really, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. And they actually didn't even have to pay a deposit, because the 10% Help to Buy paid a deposit. So it was a no-brainer for us and a no-brainer for our employees.
Because you at the time, Tony, you might remind listeners about the line of work you're in.
Yeah, we have two companies. Walsh Colour Print is a trade print house, and our sister company, Educate.ie, which is based in Dundrum and Dublin. We publish school books for primary and post-primary kids around the country. They're developed in Dublin and they're printed in our print shop in Castle Island.
Okay, yeah. And you couldn't house staff, but that's why you decided to do this 6 years ago.
Exactly, yeah. And we're the same situation now again. We've run out of houses, so we're going to lodge a new planning application and build 12 more. And fingers crossed we can get them in at a low price.
So obviously you have more company land, do you?
We have, yeah. We're lucky we have the company land, and you know, it's to, just to get the scheme off the ground and get planning permission and you know, start building again and, you know, see how it works out.
And so the company land is there, it not been used at the moment. And sorry, did I pick you up right? You have lodged planning application for 12 more units.
No, we're just preparing the application at the moment.
You're preparing the application.
You know, we'll be publishing it shortly, and when we get planning permission, we'll start again. And you know, our employees are delighted that we are, you know, redoing this thing, because some of them missed out, some of them weren't working with us at the time. So it's good for everybody. It's good for us as well. Mm. We're holding on to employees, which is, you know, which is very important.
I don't want to use the word catch, but what was the catch for people who bought the houses from yourselves at Walsh's, close to the manufacturing site? I mean, like, do you have to say, for instance, if one of them quits today, what happens to their house?
They have to pay the difference between the bill price and the
market value.
Market value. So if they stay 10 years, that doesn't come into play. They're the rules, the revenue rules.
So they can stay in the house but no longer work for you?
Well, no, they have to work for us. They have to stay. Well, we have to I suppose get our investment. Like we're putting our neck on the line there. We have to borrow money, build the house or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's a partnership. Our employees, you know, get a house and we get good workers.
Mm. No, I fully accept that. I'm just trying to get my head around, if somebody leaves the company or doesn't want to work there anymore, or for whatever reason they want to retire early, do they have to sell the house back to you?
No, they wouldn't. They just have to pay the difference.
And then it's their house?
And it's their house.
And then they can work for someone else?
Yeah, exactly.
And live in the house?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're not tied to it. It's if it doesn't work out with the company, they can sell
after 10 years.
After 10 years, but nobody. Well, they can sell it straight away if they wanted to, but they'd have to pay the difference.
And everybody who bought 6 years ago is still there.
They are. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting initiative, Tony, and I wondered if many other companies follow suit when they heard what you were doing.
Well, a few people have been onto us looking at how the scheme worked out, and they're going to progress. At least two of them are going to progress.
Do something similar. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it has helped you retain staff and good morale among the workforce and all of that. Now that so much so you're going to build another, hoping to build another 12.
Yeah, exactly. It worked out very well for us. It's cost neutral. So for us, it's a no-brainer. I know, granted, we have to borrow money and invest in 13 houses, but you know we get paid back eventually.
Mm.
You know, when the houses are sold.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Tony, thanks a million for getting in touch with us. Tony Walsh there, a businessman based in County Cork. A listener tells me in Scandinavia, major construction projects actually erect temporary accommodation on or close to the site with 44 ensuite rooms with laundry, lockers, sauna, common rooms in each block with separate dining areas and gyms on the site as well. They're for the workers that are living too far away to commute. Great idea, says this texter. Robert is on the line. Robert, you own the homesteadcottage.com based in Doolin in County Clare. I believe you have a Michelin star restaurant as part of that, but you too provide accommodation for staff.
Yeah. Hi, Andrea. Thanks for having us on. So we provide accommodation for about 70% of the staff, which is what the 9 members of staff saw. The reason is generally when we're hiring, we end up having to hire people who are, pardon me, moving to the area, you know, for a job, whether it's internationally or, you know, a lot of time out from Dublin, they're coming down. So, and most of the accommodation that's provided, like rental accommodation, is done through word of mouth rather than through the, like, staff.ie. So that's why it's a lot more difficult if they don't have the relationships with people locally to find the accommodation. So we provide the accommodation and then rent it back. So we rent, the company rents the accommodation off the landlord, and then at cost price we rent it back to the staff.
So you're not, you as in Robert as in homesteadcottage.com, are you employer and landlord, or are you kind of the management agent in between?
Yeah, exactly, management agent in between. So we're, yeah, essentially the go-between. Like I said, it's the only way for us to, especially if it, like when we're hiring people who specialise in certain areas, like, you know, the Michelin star sommelier, there isn't too many of them up around County Clare. Mm. So we end up having a lot of employees who are coming from like France, Spain, and for that reason, you know, they just, if they landed in Shannon, came up, got the bus up to Doolin, they'd be a long time trying to find somewhere to live, especially at a reasonable price.
What happens if one of them decides to leave working with yourselves?
Then it's like, it's in the contract that, you know, the accommodation is part of
the package.
Yeah. So they would have to find somewhere else to live. And look, there's a lot of the hotels, pubs, bars, restaurants around here who are offering accommodation to staff because, you know, the housing crisis has spread even to like as far west as here.
So, and in order for you to be able to attract the kind of skilled workforce that you need, Robert, and to retain them, you'd no solution but to basically go out and sort of seek some kind of accommodation provision yourself and get
that
provided.
I mean, last year we had looked at, even purchasing a couple of houses. The prices of the houses around here have gone up, especially, you know, with holiday rentals and Airbnbs. It's just, and then also, you know, like quite often, for us here, Liston Barna used to be a great place to get more accommodation. And, you know, between hotels that have been taken up with Ukrainians and that turned into IPAS centres, it's more beds that are lost to try to get accommodation for staff.
Less available accommodation. Caroline Reedy, HR expert at NFP HR Solutions, is joining us, Robert, here on the line as well. Is there going to be more of an expectation on companies and employers like Robert and Tony and Pat there to actually basically kind of become some form of a landlord as well, Caroline?
I think it definitely gives them a huge competitive advantage from an attraction and a retention perspective, but it probably suits a specific cohort of employee. we would have a lot of clients who do exactly as your employers there have done. But then some employers are very conscious that there's families that want to live together. They can't get accommodation to move to the area, etc. So again, they try their best to try and help as a go-between to, you know, give them references, etc. So there's definitely a big relocation support focus now to help people with that, getting them on their feet. Induction used to be, you know, a basic kind of help people settle in when they started the job. Induction now and relocation starts way sooner when you're at job offer stage to try and help the person see the advantages and benefits to moving to the area and all the other, you know, attractions like, you know, the, you know, schools and the healthcare and, you know, the work-life balance, etc., you know, linked to it. But there's also problems, I suppose, linked to it. You know, we'd also have issues where you might have people and they're working, you know, with an employer, and then an issue happens in the accommodation and all of a sudden it becomes a work-linked problem. So what's really, really important is that there's real good clarity around
what are the rules of engagement. You know, earlier today, and that's not, you know, to say with regards to Tony or Robert or Pat's situations that they provide, but, you know, does it kind of murky the waters a little where your employer now all of a sudden is your landlord or even potentially the auctioneer?
I think without doubt, if you don't start with having got good advice in relation to what exactly the agreement is from the outset and what are the rules of engagement around it, because ultimately you're now, you, people's social life and home life and outside of work life is now intertwined and interlinked with work, which often you would never know what goes on in people's, you know, accommodation or personal life, etc., outside of work. So I think making sure you've got really good policies in place where the employee has signed up to a separate contract. There's a contract of employment linked to the job, and then there's a separate agreement to make sure that all these eventualities, you know, the upkeep of the property, the paying of bills proactively and in a timely manner, and making sure that there is no issue. And ultimately, in all these contracts, there's a clause that says it's ultimately at the discretion of the employer to withdraw the accommodation once they give a set amount of notice to the person, should there be an issue. So I think, you know, that's another consideration that definitely we need to put in place. So there's lots of positives, as your listeners have outlined and your guests have outlined there, but there's also the risk of it going badly wrong that you need to, I suppose, prioritise at the outset to, you know, reduce the chances that it will go wrong. And a lot of people, Andrea, will say to us when the employee, you know, is brought in to say, look, there was an issue in the accommodation and now they're being questioned about it, they would say, well, I thought that was my personal life. I didn't think there was any issue with having a party last night or, you know, something breaking or, you know, there being a, you know, an issue linked to it. So I think, you know, making sure there's full clarity from the start on what is the employee signing up to. And again, it's usually good to have a set period of time. You know, it's linked to while they're in employment, but it's reviewed maybe on an annual basis to make sure that it's working for both parties in case the employer decides, you know, look, this isn't something I want to keep doing, you know, long into the future. So again, I think fair communication on both sides.
Well, when you think about it, I mean, years ago, sure, you know, the kind of the sergeant in charge of the local barracks at home would have lived in the Garda station. The bank manager often lived, in a house provided as well. It's a really interesting point, and we want to hear from more listeners about this today. Should companies provide staff with housing? And actually, would you stay with your employer for maybe the likes of 10 or 15 years if they were to provide you with a house? The email is lunchtimelive@newstalk.com. Caroline Reedy, Robert, Tony Walsh, Pat McDonough, thanks a million for getting in touch. 087 1400 106. That is the WhatsApp number.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on Newstalk. Conversation that counts.